You know, if you last week we looked at it, chapter 8, kind of reading through it, looking at the various, kind of just the overall development. If we look back through it, and maybe with the purpose of, principles might be a little strong word. I don't know that Paul was necessarily writing always about principles, but I think we could extrapolate things and say, you know, are those guidelines or principles at least, you know, highlights. So as we read just back 8:1, it says, "Now, brethren, we wish to make known to you the grace of God which has been given in the churches of Macedonia, that in a great ordeal of affliction, their abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality." If you were to look at that, what guidelines, principles, highlights, what would you pull out? Let's assume that we're writing some statement about giving. What would we pull out from this for consideration? Just the broad concept of giving. Just look at verse 1. What would you say? Anything? Anything catch your attention there? Offerings. Offerings are about grace. We don't think that way very often, do we? I mean, we think about if someone gives us something or if the church is able to offer it to someone else, that it's grace. You know, if you're talking about somebody receive, if you're on the receiving end, you apply for a grant or some other church steps in and helps you, then, you know, you say, wow, you know, there's grace. 2 Corinthians 8. But this is saying, you know, that, you know, the giving, not the receiving, the giving is grace. That behind our ability to give or our capacity to give or our willingness to give stands the very grace of God. Or at least in a context that is truly God-motivated. And then he goes on to explain it. He says that in a great ordeal of affliction, their abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality. What would we do with that? What concepts or thoughts come to mind?
The thought that I see is attitude.
Okay.
Because he talks about their deep poverty, and so he can't be, and then he talks about their generosity, so those two kinds of things we don't really
think. It's a pretty contrasted, pretty incredible contrast.
Attitude.
So their actual, if we were to look at it in a dollar amount, we're forced to, you know, draw the conclusion that the dollar amount wasn't all that significant, because they're described as being in deep poverty. But also, the two things there is that the wealth of their liberality. So, we're back to that thing. It's not the amount that's given, but the generosity, the willingness, the percentage, I'm not sure what, you know, how you want to say it, but it's something as a, commitment, I guess the word here, liberality, you know, just that it was so liberal when you look at what they had. And so when you draw something, okay, I've got $10 to my name. Well, you know, if you went 10%, it'd be a dollar. But if you only have, you know, if you have $1 million and you take 10%, it's 10% of $1 million, percent-wise, it's the same as a dollar of $10. But if that's all you have, I don't think it's the same. You know, if you're talking about your ability to live, well, you still got $900,000. You may have to change your lifestyle, but you got a lot of money compared to somebody that's got now $9 to their name. You know, and so you kind of have to be careful, I think, sometimes when we just talk strict percentage.
Something.
Well, and then this one says abundance of their joy. And so there we see the great ordeal of their affliction. So we got two contrasts. Affliction contrasted with abundance of joy. And then we have poverty contrasted with wealth of liberality. And so both of them set up an attitude or action, not just attitude, but action also. But from this giving, they had great joy. Now, often when you hear things about stewardship or giving, you know, offering, you know, it's in the sense of sometimes you almost hear it, or you may have never actually been in a church where it was said, but, you know, you've heard it jokingly or in circles, and I've never been in church. I have heard about it where they passed the offering plate more than once because they said, well, you know, you didn't give enough or whatever, and, you know, this idea of give until it hurts. Well, you know, here it's the opposite. It's, you know, I mean, it's not saying this, but it'd be give until you receive joy. I mean, you know, they have joy in their giving. And there's those two things. Sometimes we give out of guilt. We give out of responsibility. We give out of commitment. Well, the responsibility and commitment aren't bad things. Guilt's usually not a good thing. But, I mean, we can give out of those things and never experience joy. But, I mean, you can give out of responsibility and you can give out of commitment and still experience joy. But it has to do with, you know, why are you giving? You know, are you giving to participate? Are you giving to care? Are you giving because it's service? Are you giving because it's worship? And so there we have grace, that it truly is empowered by God's grace. It has to do with joy can be received, and it has to do with that liberality. It says, "For I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord." Gave of their own accord. See, that goes back to that what we were just talking about. There's that sense of it's expected to give. You received an invoice to give. You know, there are plaques on the wall, which I don't necessarily think it's bad to have plaques on the wall. I don't necessarily think it's bad to have a pew that says given by. But if that's the motivation, then it's, you know, it's not so much that it's from your own accord. It's not so much that it's according to their ability and beyond their ability. You know, usually we'd say give according to your ability. But notice here, once again, it's beyond their ability. So the woman that gave the two pennies, her ability would have been, let's say, I don't know how you do that, but let's say one penny. But she gave beyond. And so there is that sense of sacrificial giving is appropriate. Not required, but something to consider. And then, you know, this attitude is just beyond, you know, very, really hard to comprehend. Verse 4, begging us with much urging for the favor of participating in the support of the saints. Well, now, once again, we're trying to think of this in a broad category of writing principles or guidelines for giving. I don't know that you'd write the guideline that you just got to beg people to let you give. But what could from this could we pick up as a guideline or insight?
One thing that I think about is, I think beyond giving to cash, we're giving up our time.
Mm-hmm.
Wait till someone asks and say, "How can I help you?"
Okay.
You know, pick up the phone and call them and say, "I know that your world's a mess right now. Can I go get your groceries for you?"
Okay.
Proactive.
Yeah. Because you notice it says the favor of participation, the gift of participation, that once again, you know, we can get into this mindset of service is a job. Service is that drudgery thing. You know, I really ought to bake a meal or, you know, bake a pie and take it over to those people, but I don't really want to. You know, that's so different than the joy of participation. You know, it's a mindset. But it has to go back with, do you receive joy from it because of how we're thinking? It continues in 2 Corinthians 8, 5. And this, not as we had expected, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and to us by the will of God. Now we start to see something really deep, because when you look at this passage up to this point, you know, it's one of these things of it'd be easy to write rules for. You know, we could write the guidelines, principles, almost in the sense of rules. You got to give liberally. You've got to give, you got to give before they ask you. I mean, you could put them in like rules, which would break the passage. I mean, it would just be totally backwards. But we're prone to do that. But you notice here where it really puts the emphasis. Before all of these things happened, they first gave themselves to God, to the Lord. Probably Lord usually is, if you want to be technical, it's a reference to Jesus usually. They first gave themselves to the Lord. And then, by the will of God, to us. So this involvement came because of a commitment to God, and it was through that empowerment, through that worship, through that devotion of God, that they took on this action. And once again, that changes it from this sense of giving out of guilt, or giving out of this kind of blank sense of commitment or responsibility. I go to church there, I guess I ought to give. I mean, how much different it'd be in the sense of truly, a worship to God. Lord, what would you have me do? Now, there is a deal, and we were involved, I was involved in a fundraising deal once, and of course, it's always difficult because you can craft words that may sound good, but their real intent is to produce guilt or something. You know what I mean? You can always do things. You can always misuse things. But, one of the phrases was, what would the Lord have you give? Now, like I said, you can throw phrases out like that because I want to commit, I want to create guilt or whatever. I want to ask you, but I want to put it in a spiritual word. So everything can, unfortunately, can almost be misused. But if you really think about that in terms of asking people to give, what would the Lord have you give? I mean, if we take it just literally, then that puts you in a position of responding to God. God, what would you have me do? I mean, is there a role in this for me? And that seems to be the attitude here, that they gave themselves to the Lord. And then, as God worked, then they gave themselves to the, to Paul according to the will of God. And so the result was, so we urged Titus that, he would complete this gracious work. Verse 7, but just as you abound in everything, in faith and utterance and knowledge and in all earnestness and in the love we inspired in you, see that you abound in this gracious work also. I am not speaking this as a command, but as proving through the earnestness of others the sincerity of your love also. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that through his poverty, through his poverty might become rich. Verse 9, what does that have to do with giving? What do you think that'd have to do? Would that have any place in our guidelines, our principles, our insights for giving? Okay. You have we can talk. It's kind of like this group in Macedonia early. They were in some kind of a difficulty, some type of depression economically, and they were basically in poverty, but they wanted to be involved in support here, and it talks about their abundance of joy. So they gave, they didn't have much, and they gave, so now they have less, but yet they were richer in one sense. Now, the the thing is about, you know, using Jesus, it's like his richness because of his position, he gave that away to take on a position that contrastively was, a lowly position. And through his putting himself in this lowly position, we became spiritually rich. So, you know, for other people, by giving, that can cause somebody else to become spiritually rich. Had a friend, you know, he had some strange theological views a lot of times, and sometimes, you know, even when he had some things right, I wasn't always sure he had it all right in that sentence. But I remember once he helped me through seminary. They gave us some money that helped pay for my seminary. And, you know, and you tell Bob thank you, and Bob's deal was, well, I really think that the purpose of giving is so that people can praise God. Now, I'm not sure that he had all of that right in there, but he's got part of that. I think he's exactly right. That, you know, when you receive something, then it's this spiritual richness because, you know, if you only see it as, well, these friends of ours helped us out, you're missing the sense of that God empowered them. God blessed them in a way to provide for you through them. And, you know, there's a spiritual richness that comes in that sense. 2 Corinthians 8, verse 10. Paul says, I give my opinion in this matter, for this is to your advantage, who were the first to begin a year ago, not only to do this, but also to desire to do it. So, once again, we see this sense of the attitude. It's not that you just did it. It's not just that you were taking up this offering, but that you desired to do it. You know, so we're back to that sense of attitude. He says, but now finish doing it also, so that there, so just as there was the readiness to desire it, so there may also be the completion of it by your ability. So when Paul is exhorting them to complete this and to give, it's according to their ability. He's not asking them to be sacrificial. He's saying the Macedonians were sacrificial, but that's not necessarily what he's asking here. Verse 12, for if the readiness is present, it is acceptable to what a person has, not according to what he does not have. So if we were using that, what would our principle, how would we write our guideline or insight from that one? Do what you can. What else? Because there is one. Right. Yeah. And so it's not so much that what Belinda said would be wrong in the sense of do what you can, because that we see that with according to your ability. But I think it really needs to be balanced with that. It says, you know, in the sense of so we don't kind of create those false guilt things, but it's, is your heart there? Is your desire there? If your desire is there, then do according to what you can. If your heart is there, give, you know, participate in the way that you can. And that's sufficient. You know, that's really hard. I think, you know, studies after studies within churches have this 80-20. Sometimes I've seen studies in Southern Baptist and it's 85-15. That it doesn't really matter what you're talking about. That 20% of the work will be, or 80% of the work will be done by 20% of the people. 80% of the giving will be by 20%. The Southern Baptists have done studies where it's 85 by 15%. Well, you can hear that, and let's say, you know, we got a building program going for $1 million, and, you know, Joe and Fred over here both can give, one can give $500,000, the other one can give $250,000, and you hear about that, and it's wonderful, but at the same time, you're going, well, you know, I can't even... I'll never make that much money in my entire life, let alone be able to give it. And what's the point of me giving my $100? I mean, they're giving hundreds of thousands. I was going to write a check for $100, but it actually depressed me when I heard how much they gave. Well, if we think those ways, then we miss the point here. Is your desire to participate? Well, it was until I heard how big their gift was and realized mine wouldn't make a difference. And so it really should be, do I have a desire? Then to give accordingly, according to your ability. And if your ability is to give $100, your ability is to give $10, then it's according to your readiness. Is the readiness present? Then it's acceptable. And so we're looking at this and we're saying, oh, they gave so much. And I don't think we ought to be in a judgmental sense by any way of it, trying to evaluate their gift. But the reality is, God could be much more pleased with your $10 gift than He is with the $500,000 gift. Because their ability might have been to paid for the whole building. And your ability is to give $10. But now it would be incorrect of us to start saying, well, I think they could have given more, or I think they're trying to show off. That's not our role. Our role, though, is not to get depressed because we can't give as much. It's to say, I have a desire. This is what I can do. It's not insignificant. It may be insignificant in the terms of accounting the total numbers, but then if that's it, we've missed the whole part about I first gave myself of the Lord, that this is a spiritual work. Then he says, for this is not for the ease of others and for your affliction, but way of equality. Now, this one's kind of changed here, but it's not to hear the offering wasn't to build a building, it was to help somebody else. But he said it's not that we can help them out and you be afflicted, but it's to bring some equality here in the situation. Now, this is talking about people that have an affliction. There's some, and we don't necessarily know what it was, but there's something catastrophic almost that's happened to the people in Jerusalem, and they need they need other people to help support them. At the present time, your abundance being a supply for their need, so that their abundance also may become a supply for your need, that there may be equality. And so here we start seeing this in the sense of the Christian, that there should be a mutuality. That if I'm able to help, I help, recognizing that there may be another time when people will help me. Sometimes as Christians, we're eager to help, but we don't want him to receive help. Swindoll tells a great story about he got home one afternoon and the guy was there washing his windows. And he said, well, what are you doing? Well, this is, my gift to you. I'm going to wash your windows. And Swindoll said, okay. And, it's like the last thing he wanted to do was to spend that day washing windows. But he said, okay, well, let me go ahead and change. I'll be out here helping. And the guy's going, no, this is my gift to you. And he was just like, how difficult for us to allow somebody to help. And it's often it is. We may be very eager to help somebody, but it's not always easy to let people help us in some certain situations. In verse 16, but thanks be to God who puts the same earnestness on your behalf in the heart of Titus. For he not only accepted our appeal, but being himself very earnest, he has done to you, he has gone to you of his own accord. We have sent along with him the brother whose fame in these things of the gospel has spread through all the churches. And not only this, but he has also been appointed by the churches to travel with us in this gracious work, which is being administered by us for the glory of the Lord himself, and to show our readiness, taking precaution so that no one will discredit us in our administration of this generous gift. For we have regard for what is honorable, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. Now, this is a little different than just actually the giving part, but what guideline, principle, insight could we draw from this about stewardship or giving? Okay.
Take a little bit off the top or whatever.
Yeah. So, appropriate.
Justified. Yeah. Their missionary status.
So there needs to be appropriate protocols. There need to be appropriate accounting measures. There need to be ways that people can have confidence that this is handled right. You know, the scandals of the late 80s, early 90s, when they just kind of all the TV evangelists all happened at the same time, that was very embarrassing for the whole Christian community. Yeah. You know, that's true. That they currently, because when you start at, putting it in terms of that, it's not only that something's not appropriate, but that's been going on and nobody's catching it. It just really raises, it makes all of Christianity look bad. It's not like it makes that one thing look bad. It just has a sweeping sense. What is it? EFCA, or what is that, the right initials? I don't even know what they stand for. Evangelical something or other. But, you know, there's that little symbol, and it's got those letters on it with a lot of organizations now. It's a voluntary thing that they volunteer for, but if they volunteer for it, then there's certain protocols or certain responsibilities or certain statements they have to submit. And so you have an outside watchdog, so to speak, that's coming in looking at your book saying, yes, it's all above board, it's all correct. Well, I think that's wonderful they've done that. You know, instead of everybody going around saying, well, we're handling our stuff correctly. Well, this way it gives people more confidence, and it gives the world. So there should be that sense. So, there's various ways that can be done at various levels depending on the setting. But Wynn put it very well and said, not even to give that opportunity for somebody to think something wrong. John Wesley was very... that was one of the things that he insisted with people, is that, your actions should not give, just the opportunity for people to think something's wrong. And sometimes you have to not do things that, that would be simple sometimes. It's just like, for me, counseling with people, it's just, there has to, if I'm going to counsel with a woman, there has to be another woman, in the building, or there has to be somebody in the building, And I'm not going to do that by myself. And it's not, it's not that I might be concerned. It's not that Robin might be concerned. It may not be that you're concerned. But it just, it just gives the appropriateness. It protects people. And sometimes, things are done for the protection of other people, not because you have doubts. And that's why sometimes you ought to say, here are the rules. Not because I don't trust you, but because I don't want you to get hurt. And because those things happen. And that's kind of what Paul is saying here. He moves on. He says, we have sent, in verse 22, we have sent with him our brother, whom we have often tested and found diligent in many things, but now even more diligent because of his great confidence in you. As for Titus, he is my partner and fellow worker among you. As our brethren, they are messengers of the churches, a glory to Christ. Therefore, openly before the churches, show them the proof of your love and our reason for boasting about you. And now we see here the concrete gift is a statement to somebody else that I care about you. And, I don't know that we think about that often. Sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. It depends on the setting. But, as a statement that we love. And we've had, I wouldn't have ever done these things, but Robin has been the one that has done them, whereas been the one wanting us to do it. Sometimes I look at some of those situations and I go, I think I told you about Mike. I think I mentioned that about the guy that was, he wasn't hurting for any money, but he was ill, and Robin wanted it, and I think she gave him like $20, which was almost embarrassing to me. I thought, so stupid, that's my attitude, which was not very good. And then Mike's wife said, when he stopped for gas, he put in exactly $20. He saw it as a gift from God. There was this other couple that their son had, I don't remember what, but had run off, done something, I can't remember, but they were going to have to go get them. And, we went over that night, and, we gave them $100 to help with their travel. That was very meaningful to them. I wouldn't have thought of that. I wouldn't have done that on my own. it would not have crossed my mind. It can be. It's not always, but and once again, it depends. You know, what's your attitude? What are you doing with? But those things can really communicate to people. We had when Robin's she has two brothers, and the older one that's like about 3 years younger, Robin, died in 87. And when Mike died, I was writing somebody a letter, and I said that the gifts we had received was about exactly what our costs were, because we flew up there from Houston to Jonesboro, and when I said that, it kind of got me curious, and I started adding it up, and I'd never been able to remember since then. But I know it was the expenses that we had and the money's been given to us, there was a $2 difference. And if my guess is, it was $2 over. And I probably missed something, a tip or something, a tax or something. But, when you see that, it's overwhelming. And, and that's people giving you things out of love. And it's easy to miss that. I mean, it's either to miss it one way, it's either easy to miss it that it's not from God and just focus on the people, or to just think of it as from God and not see that, that they're communicating something to you. It's both ways. Well, anyway, from that passage, if we just, drew out things like that, like we've done tonight, you could pull out truly guidelines, highlights, principles, whatever you want to name it, to give you a parameter on giving, both in how you give, what your attitude is, how you receive. It's a very phenomenal passage, and it continues, and we'll look at chapter 9 next week.